On the very day that George Mallory and Sandy Irvine disappeared on Everest, another party of British climbers slowly made their way to the summit of a quite different mountain and in very different circumstances. At 2,949 feet, Great Gable was not a serious or difficult climb, but it was said to be the most completely beautiful of English mountains. It anchored the fells of Cumbria, and from its summit could be seen a dozen or more of the rounded hills and rocky crags of the Lake District, where so many English climbers had first discovered the freedom of open space and the feel of wind and rain and sleet on cold hands jammed into cracks of granite and slate. There were some 80 men and women in this solemn party, most of them members of the Fell and Rock Climbing Club, a loose association founded in 1906 and dedicated exclusively to the celebration of the English hills. Among them was the club secretary, Leslie Somerville, whose brother Howard was then with the Everest expedition, and Arthur Wakefield, club president since 1923. Wakefield had served as medical officer on the 1922 Everest expedition and had been the first to rush to the relief of the climbers swept away by the avalanche on the North Col that buried alive 7 Sherpa porters. Death was something he knew well. The most prominent figure on Great Gable this day was Geoffrey Winthrop Young, who brought up the rear, supported by his wife Len, as he struggled over boulders and whetstones in rain so fierce it swept the cape from his back. Considered by many to be the greatest English mountaineer of his era, Young was the mentor of Mallory and had been responsible for both Mallory and Wakefield securing invitations to join the Everest expeditions. This was his first climb since losing his left leg to an Austrian shell on the night of August 31, 1917, at Mont Saint-Gabriel while serving on the Isonzo front in Italy. In time, he would summit the Matterhorn with a prosthetic limb of his own design. But for the moment, it was all he could do to keep his balance and move steadily up the slope toward the others. A gifted Georgian poet and fine orator, he was here at Wakefield's invitation to help dedicate a bronze plaque inscribed with the names of those members of the FRCC who had been lost in the war, and to consecrate in their memory a tract of some 3,000 acres purchased by the survivors and gifted by them to the nation as a living memorial. The actual deeds of the land had been presented by Wakefield to a representative of the National Trust several months before, on October 13, 1923, at the annual FRCC dinner at the Sun Hotel in the nearby village of Coniston. "These title deeds," he told his audience that night, "represent the lives of those of our members who died for their country, men with whom in many cases we have walked over these fells and whose friendship we treasured. The cost is great indeed. Sir, we hand these deeds over to you in the hope and belief that future generations will be inspired with the same sense of self-sacrifice and devotion to great ends, even at the cost of self-obliteration, that was shown by these who died and whose monument this is." The names of the dead were then read, as those present stood in silence. Now many of the same company of men and women gathered around a boulder at the summit of Great Gable. Covering the memorial plaque was a rain-soaked Union Jack, the very flag that had flown at Jutland from the bridge of the battleship Barham of the 5th Battle Squadron of the Royal Navy. Before drawing back the flag to reveal the bronze, Arthur Wakefield stepped forward and began to speak of a land, the breath of the moors, the spirit of freedom that had impelled them all to march to war. "It was an inspiring address," wrote a reporter from the Manchester Guardian who was present, "one that brought all thoughts back to those years of strain and trial and sacrifice."